So again, so the Gemara here in Dalgan Rabban Aleph says that that if you if he'd be paspatanur hitiru lirdosa according to Shiavul Dechi Yivchatos, although oh thank you hitiru, did they or did they not allow redia sapas, scraping the dough from the oven, which is according to most Rishonim either a shvus or a uvda dechol, some sort of a drabanan. There's a debate exactly which drabanan, which level of drabanan, but either way, according to almost all the Rishonim and drabanan, did they allow that in order to prevent a greater violation, namely the rice, bishop. So the Gemara says, "Amalei Ravacha Barabai LeRavina Echadami." What are we talking about? If the guy, you know, was mistaken, he didn't know that he was violating, and he's still mistaken, so he's not going to ask a question, and he's, you know, it's not a question of what he should do. He doesn't know that he did anything wrong, and therefore there's no question of. You know how to advise him. He's not asking questions. El alav di hadar vi idkar. Unless we're talking about a situation where he finds out that he's made a mistake and that he's about to violate malachas bishul, and that's why he asks the shaila. So the Gemara says, but that can't be mi mechayev. In that case, he wouldn't be obligated to begin with, because hatanan we learned in the Mishnah kol chay v'chatos ena chayav and ad shetei tchilason shkaga the sofan shkaga. The rule is that you have to be a shogeg in order to be chayav chatos, mitchila v'adsof, from the beginning to the end of the process. So if you started off shogeg and then you found out at a certain point, and that point you were aware, that wouldn't be a basis for chayav chatos. And since the issue here is kodim shiyavol idei chatos, so that wouldn't be a problem because he's not going to get a chatos anyway. Now, what the Gemara is neglecting, and this is what we discussed the last time that we met, is the focal point really the actual chiyuv chatos, or is it the violation, the chilul Shabbos, right, which triggers a chatos? In which case, you could have that violation even if technically you don't have a chilul Shabbos. If you put the food on the oven, right, so even if you find out now that it's prohibited, so you're not going to actually bring a chatas, but there is still going to be the malacha if you let it sit there and cook or bake, then you're going to violate the malacha. There's going to be the level of chilul Shabbos. So why aren't we concerned with that? That's the question, and that becomes particularly an acute question given the continuation of the Gemara, as we already seen, and especially as the Bali Tosus understand it, which we'll explain in just a second. But the Gemara says Ela b'mezid. So we're talking about, obviously, not shogeg, and not regarding chatas, but mezid, and regarding kares and skila. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, kodem shiyavu l'day yisur skila liboile, then you should have said before it comes to skila, not before it comes to chatas, because we're talking about mezid. So the Gemara says, amra shila liolam b'shogeg, we are talking about shogeg, ulaman hitiru lachem. Who are we talking about? After all, if it's shogeg, then he knows, and if he knows, he's not chayav chatos. The answer is a third, somebody else, an observer who's aware that this is about to happen, that it's Shabbos, that it's also on Shabbos, and the question is, should he intervene and violate the Isur Drabanan of Radia Sapas in order to save his neighbor from violating the bigger Isur or not? So the Gemara says, Maskef Arv Sheshes V'chamlo Adam Chatei Kedei. I should say she is ke, right? Chavercha, right? So do we tell somebody that you have to sacrifice yourself in order to benefit your neighbor? In other words, you should do a violation, you should do an aveira to save him from doing a bigger aveira. Do we ask somebody to make that kind of sacrifice? Of course, this is a massive issue. That's our third topic, which I hope we'll be able to begin today. So the Gemara says, "El Ravashi Leolam BeMezid." Let's go back to the idea that we're dealing with Mezid. The Eman in Ochanami. Let's revise the language to Kodem Shiyava Liday Isur Skila. And then the Gemara says, "Ravacha Brei Derava Maslo BeHeja Amar Avivi Amar Bai Hidbik Betanur Hid Pas Betanur Itilo Dosa Kodem Shiyava Liday Isur Skila." Notice when the Gemara speaks about Skila, it speaks about Isur Skila, not Chiyuv Skila. When it talks about Chatos, it talks about Chiyuv Chatos. That's what Tosus asks. When Tosus says Ela Dahadar Viitka Mi Mechayev Tema Vilishni Ema Lidei Iser Chatos, right? Kede Amar the Samach called Mishav Lidei Iser Skila. What Tosus has in mind even more so is based on their own understanding. Tosus here Dibra Maskil called Mishav Lidei Iser Skila says Vim Tomar My baya hizu. What's the whole question here? Imitilur dosa. Pshita shla yishmalanu im nasarlo. If you tell him you're not allowed to take the dough out of the oven because of an isur drabanan, and therefore, sorry, there's nothing you could do at this point, but you're looking at a chilul Shabbos, which is going to bring you to skila. So Tosa says, we discussed my objections to this question, but whatever. But Tosa asks, who's going to listen? Right, his self-preservation is going to kick in, and is going to motivate him to violate. That's what Tosa asks. But Tosa's answer is v'tir tzriva, v'lo v'tir lo mechayv skila. Kim shemeniach milir dos, ayidei masha anu, osrin lo. Since we're the ones who are tying his hands, he won't get skila either way. The only question is, he's not going to get skila because we're going to allow him to do the Yisod Rabbanan. No, we don't allow him the Yisod Rabbanan. No, we let the Chil Shabbos take place, but he's potter from the onish of skila either way because we have put him in a situation where he is onus. That's the question. And then the Gemara then tells us, says, V'chei b'psachim p'so perakha isha orel hazah yizembel himidu v'vrayim b'makom karis amalom b'chayit karis ol v'rabbanan. Who the Ashrulei Lemevad Pesach? We'll continue with the Tosus in a couple of minutes, but this is the part that we need for the moment. So basically, Tosus's view is that if we do not allow him to do Rediyas HaPas, he will not violate Skila. He will be involved in Chilul Shabbos, but he will not violate Skila. So according to Tosus, it's even clearer that when the Gemara uses the expression Kodim Sheyavo Lidei, not Chiyuv Skila, but Iser Skila, they mean it, because either way, there's no chiyuv skila. The only question is whether there's a chilul Shabbos, right, of the magnitude which, under normal conditions, would trigger a skila, right? In other words, is there an iser skila? That's the question. So that's why you can understand the previous Tosas, where Tosas says, "Oh, so in the version of this story that is about Mazid, right? The issue is what." Whether or not even though in terms of onesh, nothing is on the table, but since on the table there is an issue of iser, meaning the level of chilul, we still care about that very much, obviously. So hu adin, that should have bothered us on the shogig level. Well, why does Gemara say that once he knows, that he violated, or he's about to violate, or that it's asur, right, that there's no chatos anymore, and therefore we don't care? What do you mean we don't care? We don't care. We should care that there's going to be a chilul Shabbos of the magnitude which under normal conditions would be mechayiv and mechatos. It's a technicality that there's no chiyuv chatos in this case. That's what Tosus asked in the little Tosus, Ella Dahadar. Tosus asked that question. Tosus didn't give an answer to that question. The Ramban asked the same question. The Ramban does give an answer. The Ramban says once the Gemara brings in the idea that Mezid is related to the Iser, not to the Chiyuv, you're right, in Achanami, we could have given this answer in Chatos as well. We're forced into this answer for Skila, but once we know it's true, then you're right, we could extend the same answer. In other words, we're interested in Befoal Onshim here, or we're interested in Chilul Shabbos, the Iser, the Maisa Beira. The answer is, whatever you say for Shogeg, you'll say for Mezid, whatever you say for Mezid, you'll say for Shogeg. We just weren't aware in the Gemara that was the focal point until the end of the Shaka Matari. That's the Ramban. The Tosus assumes that there is a difference. Ramban says, no, whatever you're going to say about one, you're going to say about the other. The Meiri says explicitly there's a difference. What?
Does the Gavra get an ownership point to Tosus?
Which?
Does he get anything? Malkus, anything?
No, no, that's the whole point. Tosus says, you mean Skila?
It's scot-free.
Scot-free. I know scot-free. I mean, he has a lot to... Sleepless
night. Does he have to give an accounting for this?
He's an onus. It's like anybody. He's an onus on the onus part, but definitely he did the Maisa Vera of Chilul Shabbos.
He's only an
onus.
If there's no onus skila, then you don't really have the Isur skila.
You do. Because he still did what he did. Oh, we'll get to this in a second. He still did an act of Chilul Shabbos. There's Chilul Shabbos taking place because of
but
his
not
action.
To the level that brings him an onus skila.
It doesn't mean the onish, but it is. That's what Tosus is. We have to read the Gemara. Tosus is saying, we tied his hands right now, and therefore he can't get out of it. So we take him to punishment because he wants to get out of it. We don't let him. But then what's the Gemara's Safek about? Gemara wants, why should you do Rediyas Abbas if you haven't done anything? The answer is because you have done something by putting the food in the oven, b'mezid, right? The fact that we now won't let you say, extricate yourself from it, but the fact is you put it in there willingly. So as a result of your actions, there is a Chilul Shabbos, there is an Iser Skila, there's just no Chiyuv Skila.
You left out the details. I mean, the mezid, there is no mezid unless there's hasra and you need a
certain right. So Tosis, that's the next line in Tosis. In this Tosis, which we're going to discuss more fully. But if you want to leave it now, I was going to leave it for later. But let's just look at it now for a second. Dim Tomar. Hechi also the day Chiyuv Skila. He says, but his question is broader than yours. How will you ever get Skila in Bishul? Right? Aha, Asra, Safeku. The Bishah, Shehidbik. Pas, Betanur. When you put the food in the oven, Shema, Haya Bedaita, Lerdosa, Kodim Shehavala de Yisra Skila. Maybe you intended, or Kneger is bothered by why do we care about his intention?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the point is, you could always take it out,
right.
And we'll get to that in a second. I'll get back to that. Right? So the answer Tosfos gives, we'll get back to it, is, I'll just read it very quick. V'tir Triva, Kim Jehidbik, Tochid Edibur Shal Asra, B'vade Te'afe, Im Lo Yerdena, Lav Asra Safeku, V'vade Lo Yerbedaita, Lirdos, Kodim Afiyah. Basically, Tosfos says, it's true, it's possible that you'll do the action that they're warning you against, and you still won't be chayiv, that's possible. But still, there's a certain momentum, and that momentum, I'll explain what we mean by that in a few minutes, determines with regard to Hasra, that it's not considered Hasra something. That's exactly what Tosfos is asking. Because you have a funny situation here in which, basically, there's no Chiyuv Skila, but there's an Iser Skila. Now, what this really touches on, so we talked about the Shogeg Mezid issue, I don't want to go back on that, that we talked about in general, is Chilul Shabbos the Shogeg and Chilul Shabbos the Mezid, are they identical? Or, I mean, obviously, one, their difference in ownership. In terms of the act of Chilul Shabbos, objectively, are they identical or not? And I tried to show that at least three different issues, right? Isi ben Yehuda, who said that there's a single malacha that doesn't have skila, according to many Rishonim, but it does have khatas, the Havamina, the Mechilta, that you have to violate all the malachos together in order to bring any khatas. The Ramban says that's for Shogeg, but not for Ma'at Neis. Means that any single one that you do b'chavana, the kosher sheitzim, right? Kosher sheitzim didn't do all the malachos, right? That's the second example, and there's a third example, right? Let's say you do phase one, and it's going to lead to phase two. Are we only worried about the befo alonesh, like the chatos, or are we even worried about the iser, the ma'isaveira, the chilul Shabbos, like we are? That's one issue. So the second issue, which very much is connected to it, is the question of how we look at bishul. I framed it last time in terms of bishul and zareah. So I don't want to get too deeply into Zareya now, but let's just get back to specifically Bishul. Meaning in Bishul there are two phases. You can call it, you know, the phase one and phase two. Phase one is when you put food in the oven. But, you know, nothing has happened then, and nothing might happen, nothing will happen for another 2 hours, or 3 hours, or 1 hour, depending on, you know, the heat of the oven, whether it's cooking, etc. So that's phase one. Phase two is when the object, you know, is transformed by the cooking or the baking and reaches that, you know, passes that Rubicon, if you will. The question is, what is the relationship of those two phases? Are they two halves of Bishul? Or is Bishul front-loaded? It's all about when you put the food in the oven. Of course, if you take it out earlier, you can undermine it, you can uproot it, but the real part is the kuvaseh, when you put the food in the oven. Or is it the opposite? Is the real, real Bishul, right, when the food cooks or bakes, when something happens to it, even though that's the Sheva Taisa, and the first part is not even a phase one, it's a Hechsher B'Alma. Or maybe there's a Maisa Bishul and a Chetzeshul Bishul. Maybe the Maisa Bishul is when you put the food on the oven, that's how Chaim understood it. The Chetzeshul Bishul is when the object becomes Mevushul. Why does all this matter? It matters a lot. So there are a number of issues that would seem to be connected to how we look at Bishul, whether it's front-loaded, whether it's back-loaded, whether it's, you know, integrated, whether it's two halves. What exactly is it? So one issue is exactly the Gemara's question. The Gemara said, but that the Gemara here says that If you put food in the oven, right, and bishogeg, and then somebody reminds you, or you remember, in the middle, before it cooks, that you're going to be patur michatas. Why? Because you need tchilaso v'sofo b'shkaga. What's the source of that halacha? It's a din in Shkagos, so not just Nuchas Shabbos. But the Mishnah develops it on Kuf Beis, Amar Aleph, in the context of Hotzah. If you did an Akira, and then between the Akira and the Hanacha, you found out that it's a malacha, or that it's Shabbos. So the Gemara said, the Mishnah says, that you're going to be Patur Mikatas, because you need Tchilaso v'sofo b'shkaga. So, if that's the paradigm, that's the model, so is phase one and phase two of Bishul similar to Akira and Hanacha of Hotza'ah? And says, well, that's a complicated question, right? Because we spent enough time about discussing Akira v'Hanacha, so that everybody here knows that there's a big debate how you understand the relationship between Akira and Hanacha. Right? Is it Ikar Akira? Is it Ikar Hanacha? Is it both? He gave it to each one half? Is it integrated? We talked about a lot of different issues. So now, a parallel question comes up on Bishul. But as we've said many, 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 many times, just because two questions are similar doesn't mean that they're the same. Right? Just because whatever position you take about the relationship between Akira and Hanacha and Hotzah, that doesn't have to be the perspective on Tchilas Bishul, meaning Sima B'Tanur, and an actual Bishul on Bishul. Just like, you know, and that's where the different poskim part company, like the Rashash on Ayin Gimel, as we noted, is of the opinion that Zoreya and Bishul are the same. They work in the same way. That's why he said, oh, we don't know in Zoreya, this is what we talked about already, we don't know what happens in Zoreya if you uproot you put the seed in the ground on Shabbos. That's Zoreya. Let's say on Tuesday or Monday or Motzai Shabbos you uproot it before it could really be Nishrash. The Gemara doesn't discuss that case. The Rosh Hashanah says you're Potter. How do you know it? From our Gemara here in Dalet Amud Aleph. Is our Gemara talking about Zoreya? No. Our Gemara is talking about Bishul. So how do we know from Zoreya from Bishul? Because we know in our Gemara that if you put food on the oven and you take it off before it boils or cooks, that's your potter. So the Rosh Hashanah says, who I did, Zoreya? Other Rishon, other poskim disagree with him, the Menchaschino, Fegleital. They'll say, yeah, that's because Bishul is backloaded and Zoreya is front loaded. You can't compare those two things. And similarly, that's the other Chiddush of the Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah says, what happens if you put food in the oven right before Shabbos ends and it only cooks on Motzai Shabbos? Right? The Gemara doesn't address that case. Right? But what happens in that situation in Zoreya? Or that's classical Zoreya. You put the seed in the ground and it catches on Tuesday. Are you chayiv? Sure. So what do we see? If you do the Maisa, the Kumbase on Shabbos, even though the conclusion, the Sheval Tasa, takes place on Chol, it's still chashayach. So the Rosh Hashanah says, in my opinion, Bishul can teach you about Zoreya. So you can learn Zoreya from Bishul. That's what we talked about a minute ago. And you can also learn Bishul from Zoreya. Right? In both cases, both phases are important. And again, the Egel Tal, the Menchas Chinuch, they disagree. They say, well, you can't compare those two things. In the case of Zoreya, again, the reason why it being Nishrash or Niklat on Chol is not a problem is because it's all very front-loaded. It's when you put the seed in the ground. Now again, if you put it in a place which is not suitable for growth, that's a different story. And if you put it in a place with the intention of uprooting it, maybe that's also a different story. That's more debatable. Right? And when did you have in mind to uproot it? On Shabbos, Chol, whatever. But basically it's very front-loaded. But Bishul is about the Afiyah or Bishul itself. But the Rosh Hashanah disagrees. That's the interesting debate. Similarly, we have here the same problem, same kind of an issue. But here the Gemara does it. The Gemara says, Bishul 1, Bishul 2. Bishul put it in the oven, Bishul when it gets cooked. That's comparable to what the Mishnah says, Tchilasa v'Sofo b'Shkaga, about Akira and Hanacha. There's no debate in this Gemara. They seem now is that because as long as there's a piece missing, something that can get you patur, or a moment where you can still extricate yourself, that still constitutes also the self of Chicago, even if it isn't an equal or even a defined part of the process, maybe. Or is it because there's a real equation here, and just like Akira and Hanacha maybe are considered to be components, so too in Bishul, the beginning and the end are each important components in Bishul.
There's no question by Akira and Hanacha, if you made Akira and Shabbos, Hanacha and Motzei Shabbos.
Correct.
You wouldn't be Chayiv on Ochra.
Correct. And I'll tell you something else. Is there any question in your mind? I haven't seen anybody speak about this, I'm sure they do. Does anybody think that if you put a seed in the ground, right, and b'shogeg, and then on Monday you find out, you know, that it was Shabbos, or that you learn the halachos of Zareya before it was Nishrash, that that's going to be a chisaron of Tchilas of Asofa b'shkaga? I would be shocked if there was such a sheet. Meaning what you find out on Chol is going to matter in terms of Tchilas of Asofa b'shkaga for Zareya. I can't tell you that I can't tell you for sure that the Rashash wouldn't say that, but my instinct is that even the Rashash would say, I'm not going that far. Right?
Yeah, could I ask one sure. question? When the Gemara answers Elav L'Acherim, what would be the view of L'Acherim in terms of the person that did it amazing? Is there a chiyuv on the Acherim of Losam?
Mean to intervene?
Oh,
we'll get to that. That's issue number three. That's the chatei kedei, as you say, shayizke chavera, right? That's hold off on that for now. I want to do number two, meaning the nature of bishop. So that's one issue in the Gemara. The other two issues that come up in Tosas, or three issues that come up in Tosas, are some of the ones that we've discussed. For example, right? If the Chachamim say you are not allowed to do Rediyas Apas, so what does Tosas say? And you put it in Bedezin, phase one. Now the Chachamim say you have to leave it there. So what does Tosas say? That's Onus. And you don't get the Chiyub Skila, even though there is an Iser Skila. Why is there an Iser Skila? Because you began Bedezin. Right? Why is there no Chiyub Skila? Because we won't let you get out of it. That's called honest enough, right? But what's fascinating is that Tosas brought a raya. How does Tosas know? It doesn't say it in the Gemara. How does Tosas know that you don't get skila? So they brought a raya from Psachim, Arel Izemel Hazah. What is Arel Izemel Hazah? A different reason, different drabanons or shvusim, which preclude your ability, which prevent you from being ready to bring the Korban Pesach on time. Now, Korban Pesach is a very serious matter. It's a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah say sheish bakaris. Right? You have to really do it. It's very urgent. Any mitzvah say is a good thing to do, maybe even urgent, but mitzvah say sheish bakaris, right? Much, much more so. And yet, the Rabbanon say, you're not allowed to do hazab, you know, of mei chatas on Shabbos, so you're not going to be ready on time. Whoa! That the Rabbanan is going to preclude my ability to do mitzvah say sheish b'kares. Can it do that? Himidu chachamim divrayim the makom chiyuv kares. That's what the Gemara says. Right, what the rules of that are? The debate is the Rabban has a view, the Rambam has a view. That's not for now. Okay, so part of the Rabbanan daraisa, broader issues. But the point is this a good comparison or not? What Tosa says is that our case, where you benezed, put something in the oven, right? But now you want to take it out, and the Yisud Rabbanon doesn't let you, and therefore you're going to be patur since we don't let you, is being compared to a situation where a person was tameh, right? You, for whatever reason, he became tameh. Does not benezed necessarily. He's tameh, and because of that, certain dinei drabanan that prevent him from being ready for Korban Pesach, so we don't hold it against him. We don't say it's your chayv karis. Are those things comparable? So the Tosas Yishanim here on the side says you can't compare those two things. Look at Tosas Yishanim. Tema l'mareinu rav Reb Shmuel mimir vora. Im kein maikam ibai kimid bein atiru bein lo atiru lo mechayev pshita d'lo yatiru. He says, if Tosa's right, that either way you don't get punished, so then they might as well take in the hard stand and say that you can't take it out. Because either way, you're not going to get punished. This way, at least you'll save on the drabanan. Right? So another way to look at it. V'nirli d'naf kamina mitiru d'mechayiv im lo yirda. So first, Tosa Shalom says, listen, yeah, but if he is allowed to, if they decided that that's better, you know, to save the Easter skila, then if he decides not to, he'll be chayiv skila, because he does have a choice. So there's still naf kamina. But inami, he gufa kami baile yatiru dimlo yatiru mechayiv. What they're trying to figure out is gufa, whether or not, if they tell you no, whether you'll be chayiv or potter. So in other words, according to Tosfos Yeshanim, it's possible that if a chachamim say to you, you are not allowed to do rediyah fapas, you'll be chayiv skila. So he says velo dami lahi de psachim, even the pasha, right? There's no comparison, he says, to what's going on in Psachim. Because in Psachim, it's just a circumstance where he happens to be Tameh. There happens to be a Din D'Rabbanan that you're not allowed to do Hazah on Shabbos. Mimela, he's going to miss out through no fault of his own. But because of the system intervenes, right, to prevent him from bringing a Korban Pesach. Here, what? The Chachamim intervened to force him to violate Bishul. Who told him to put the food in the oven? The Nazid. Right? If you want, you can call it chiloso b'pshia. It's hard to even know whether it's self-abonus, frankly. Now again, there could be several explanations of this argument between Tosfos and the Riva. It's a fascinating argument. It could be a machlokas about, you know, p'tur onesh and chiloso b'pshia, self-abonus, what constitutes an onesh in exempting you from... It could be all about those things. Or a very acceptable, compelling even candidate, right, for explaining this idea would be, you know, one of the possibilities that they're arguing about Bishul. Meaning, Tosa says, listen, the main event, or at least half of the main event, a critical part of the event is the end. Right? And as far as the end is concerned, he's an anus. So it's comparable to Izamel and Hazah. That's an anus, and this is an anus. Maybe the Tosfos Yeshanim says, either the end part is just a tnai bialma. Of course, if it doesn't get cooked, it doesn't get baked, then nothing happened, l'mafreya. Right? But the real maisa veira, the kumbase, certainly, the physical part, moreover, maybe even the mechayiv, is putting the food in the oven. That isn't a hafshar. That's really the main event, or half the main event. In which case, just because his onus, the onus doesn't allow him to get out of it, but the onus isn't what forces him to violate. He violated voluntarily. He put the food in the oven. So if we look at the food in the oven, putting the food in the oven is a hafshar bialma, and we focus half or even more than half on the sof, right? Then we can understand Tosfos. But if we focus very much on the beginning, we can totally understand Tosfos Yeshanim. Similarly, that might be pshat, part of the pshat of the continuation. What does Tosfos then next ask, as we discussed already? Hasra safek. Tosfos says every time you put food in the oven and they warn you, you can always take it out. Now, again, that also could be an issue in Hasra. Does Hasra and Hasra safek about pragmatically your ability, you know, to defy the Hasra and still not to violate? Is that what it's all about? Or maybe Hasra depends on the Maisa Aveira, and therefore you have to pin down critically what is the key moment here. Right? In which case, I would say the following. The question is better, I mean, namely, this is Hasra Safek, the question becomes better the more we look at Bishul as being what I call backloaded. I mean, it's all about the end of the process. Because, say, you know what? Right now he's putting food in the oven. Nothing's happening. It's a hechsher bialma, or maybe it's phase one. Right? The real action is at the moment of afiyu bishul. But that's not where he's getting the hasra from. We're not at that point. He could take it off before that. So when I said to him, don't do this, don't do what? Put food in the oven. Right? No, don't cook. go bake. That's not cooking or baking. There's plenty of time for that. But if I say that Bishul and Afia is partially or even more so front-loaded, that's the Kumbase. That's the real Bishul. Of course, it has to get there in the end. Otherwise, you know, nothing happened. So then what I might say is, it's true, you can intervene, you can rewrite history. Just because you can rewrite history, that means that there's no proper Hasra. So this is another issue. I mean, we find this in other places. You know, the everybody knows this. There's a famous question the Bali Tosis asks Gittin about Afkin Rabban on the Kiddush Minei. Right? The Gemara says in the beginning of Ksuvis, and you know, Nivamas, a few places, that there are certain things that you do that you could do in the Prague context of Ishus, where the Chachamim will swoop in and they will say Afkin Rabban on the Kiddush Minei. We're okay with Kiddush. How they do that, what the mechanism it is, that's a very interesting topic, but not for now. So Afkin Rabban on the Kiddush Minei. Fine. So Bali Tosas ask in Gittin, Mamad Gimelam Aleph, they say there should never be a death penalty for a violation of Eishes Ish, because there's always Hasras Safek, because maybe the guy, maybe the husband will try to give her a get, Shalom Faneha, that'll trigger an Afkin Rabban on the Kiddush Minei, it'll turn out they were never married. So he could give the woman this Hasra, I mean the Adam could give the Hasra. She could go ahead and do what she wants, and in the end of the day, maybe there won't be a chiyuv. So that should be called Hasra Safek. So Bali Tosas thinks this is a serious question. Some of the Chachmei Sfarad say that's a, what? I mean, just because you could rewrite it, you can occasionally in halakha you can rewrite history, but it's a revision of history until it you never anticipate revision of history. I mean, if you know enough and people, you might anticipate some people might, you know, be inclined to revise history. That's not what I'm saying. What I mean is that legally, right? Legally, even if there's a possibility, right, to uproot something retroactively, basically, that's something that we inherently cannot anticipate. Because we're in a certain time sequence. And that time sequence has to be respected. Now, if you pull that trigger and you rewrite history, then we deal with that. And then the question is also how to contend with the fallout. You know, what depends on the revision and what depends on what happens sequentially. That makes it quite interesting. But the point is that you're never going to say that something is, you know, mostly you're not going to say that something Hasra Safek, because you could do something to rewrite history. So what's happening here? It's not exactly rewriting history, but the point is, the more you see this as frontal, you did a bishul, right? But of course it has to reach its climax, right? Its culmination. Fine. You might, you know, intervene artificially to prevent that. That's not a lack. The Maisa Veira was putting the food in the oven in condition that it will bake and cook on Shabbos. That's not a problem. But so what does Tosas actually say? The Tosas said, "Kirtuva the kibun shehid b'ktok kedivibur shalasra ubevadai teyafem loyer dena." He put it on the oven right away. He did the kumbase. It's not mechusar Maisa after. You don't need to do anything more. He just needs to walk away now. He put something in motion. Lav hasra safek. Then he adds, "Devadai lohaya bedaita lirdos kodem afia." He didn't have intention, probably, to put it in the oven and then scrape it off. Lohav hasra safek ele bekech emal banim lemanu perke eloin alokin bitlu v'lo bitlu d'shem ele yishbar knafeha lo yishchetena d'yachshav shem yishabar knafeha in yicholim lasros and lohav hasra ele alav in tan sipo, which I'm not going to get into. Falav kvar avar became b'shvua shlochol kikazu mochol zu v'ochol yisur v'hodochol etnoi. He just wanted to say that cases of Hasra Safek are cases where there's a piece missing. I say, don't do that. You do it, you're going to violate, you're going to be chayev. But there's another piece. He has to do something else in order to be chayev. But here it's not. He could extricate himself from it, but he doesn't need to do it. If he walks away, it's done. So that's what we're talking about here. Huh. So Rabbi Kaveger asked a question, interestingly. Look at Rabbi Kaveger for a minute. Says, first of all, See, Tosfos Der Masel Konim Shiyava Bevadet Teafam Lo Yerdena. The Rabbi Kivaker says Ein Gitin Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph Tosfos Der Masel Afkinu. That's the point that I made a couple of minutes ago about comparing this to Tosfos' question about Afkinu Bar LeKiddushim. Meaning, is there Hasras? Is it a problem of Hasras Safek when you can be Oker something on Mafreya? But then he adds, "Bemsas dibura of devad elohi bedaitel miloshon ze mashma divshimochi lo hava asra safek," because he intends to go through with it. Vili mashe kosav acharkach chen shvua lo ochal ze mo ochal ze mashma divshlo ochal zu dim lo ochal zu lo hava asra safek kivin b'chusar ma'isa av shlo shayich lo mar tohaya bedaitel shlo lo ochlo tafilu behipuch. Again, the short part of the story is Rabbi Kivaker is saying normally it shouldn't depend on what his intention is. It should depend objectively whether it is or isn't mechusar ma'isa, or whether or not you can uproot it if that's considered mechusar ma'isa, and so on. But I think that the answer is, there could be several answers, but part of the answer may be that this is a bit of a tricky eino mechusar ma'isa too, because it's not just that you could revise history here, but if you leave things as are, they will be. Or this is what they are. There was a kumase, and you don't need anything more. But it is also true that nothing happens at the moment of the kumase until you reach the point of cooking or boiling. So maybe what Tosfos has in mind is, if you put, let's say I need to store my my dough, I want to hide it from the grandchildren or whatever. So I put it in the oven, where they won't get at it. But my intention is never for it to cook or bake. Right? So is that, I've done a Maisa Bisha Vafia, but, I intend to be Oker at Lamafreya? Maybe not. Maybe this whole question, whether or not front-loaded Bisha, back-loaded Bisha, both, one is the Maisa, the other is the Chefza, maybe it just sensitizes Bishul more so than other processes to your intention. That's when I put it on the oven, if I intend to keep it there till it cooks or bakes, right, that's a Maisa Fio, Maisa Bishul right away. If I had a mind right away to take it off, right, then in a Hanami, that wouldn't be anything. Right. It's not that a general Hasra Safek depends on your intention. Hasra Safek generally depends objectively on what you have already done in response to the warning that you received, and whether it's Mechus or Maisa or not. Maybe in both directions. But here in Bishul, there's an added extra dimension, and that is the ability to take what looks like a Hechsher and make it into a Kumbase, at least the Maisa Deira of Bishul and Afiyah. In any case, in this Tosfos we have two interesting issues. One is Asra, right? The other is Shia or Ones. That might go in different directions too, maybe because it's complicated. Maybe the Maisa Bishul is Bekumbase, and maybe the Chetzashul Bishul is still B'Shev Al Tasa at the time of the Bishul. Maybe Tosfos can straddle the fence a little bit here. But those are two issues. There's a third issue, and that's related to the even though we're not going to learn that whole sugya right now, but that's a line in Tosfos. Tosfos says, Tosfos, you might as well reach through the beginning of the Tosfos for a minute. V'chiyomer lo la'adam chatei b'shvil sheyizke chaberach. Alright? Tosfos says, v'hod amar b'kol ma'arvin. Our Gemara says what? Unequivocally, you do not ask someone to sacrifice himself spiritually for his neighbor, right? Well, if we could use the expression that we use in other contexts, right, parallel contexts or for physical life, chayechakot. However, there are other gemaras in Shas that seem to say the opposite, including the Gemara in Eruvin. Gemara in Eruvin says that Rebbe Savar Nichale Lachaver De Le'Eved Yisura Klila V'lo Le'Eved Ama'aretz Yisura Rabba. Right, Rabba said it's better to ask the Talmud Chacham to do a small Yisur, right, and not to impose upon the, not to have the Ama'aretz violate an Yisura Rabba. meaning Chatei Kadeshi is Kachavercha. Exactly the opposite of our Gemara. So you need to square these. That's sort of one of the, when we get to that topic fully, we're going to discuss the different approaches. So the first approach in Tosis is Hasam Kadeshi Leyochla Ma'aretz, right? Tebel Al Yado. Tosfos' first answer is the Gemara in Erevin is talking about a case where this Talmud Chacham asked the Amaretz, you know, to fill up stuff for him, whatever. He is the one who's going to be responsible, right? Indirectly, no, inadvertently. He didn't mean to. If the Amaretz, he's worried the Amaretz is going to eat Tebel because of him. So it's better for, he therefore is obligated to put himself on the line, to do an Iser Kal, in order to save the other fellow from being Nichshal because of him in an Iser Chamor. But here we're talking about a bystander. Somebody was being, Reuven put food in the oven. Right? And then Shimon, we want to know, should Shimon do or Dias HaPas, an Iser Kal, in order to save Reuven from an Iser Chamor? But Shimon isn't responsible for Reuven's Iser Chamor. That tells us that. Very good answer, right? I'm responsible to fall on my spiritual sword for him if his problem was caused by me. That's a very legitimate distinction. Okay. So then Tosfos goes on to add, the Omer Riva, but according to this reasoning, you would think that if we were talking about one person, right, and the question is whether he should do an Iser Kal in order to save himself from an Iser Chamor, logic dictates that the answer would be, of course. Right? So, Tosa says, Yom Riba, we still don't know in our case that this is so. Why? Even the person himself, if he knows that this is going to happen to him, even then, it's not clear that he should violate the Iser Kal in order to save himself from the Iser Kal. Why? In the case of Reuven and Shimon and the Tevel, the Iser didn't yet happen. Shimon can do an Iser Kal to prevent Reuven from doing any Maisa Aveira. Kamor. Al Yado, for that matter. Listen to this. Aval Hacha, however, when it comes to Bishul and Hidbik Pas Batanur, HaMaisa Shel Iser Kvar Nasa. Right? The Maisa Aveira took place already when he put the food in the oven, even though it didn't cook, it didn't bake. Umimela Yigmar. And if he doesn't do anything else, he just walks away, B'shev Al Taisa, it will get completed by itself. Therefore, Layasa Filu Iser Kal B'Yadayim. Therefore, since it's Ke'ilu Kvar Avar, it's like it happened already, right? Even though he could undermine it, he could uproot it, we don't allow him necessarily even to do an Iser Kal to uproot an Iser Chamor when the Iser Chamor on a certain level has already taken place as a Maisa. So once again, this is an expression of Bishul. Again, there are two ways to read each of these lines, but you could read this line very innocuously and say, no, what we mean is the Kumbase, as opposed to Sheval Taisa, the Kumbase has already been done. And the Kumbase will dictate that the Maisa there will take place in its time. We're not going to allow a kumbase, a lesser kumbase, right, when a greater kumbase has already taken place. But the simple pshat of Tosfos is that it's not just about kumbase and sheval tas. The kumbase means that there was a maisa aveira, meaning bishul is already in the process, or most, for all intents and purposes, as an action has been done. If I can prevent bishul, I might want to, you know, do an iser kal. But to uproot the Iser, which already took place, by doing a new Iser, even a lesser one, that I don't have the right to do. So these three perspectives in Tosfos and the one discussion in the Gemara highlight these questions in very dramatic fashion. There are other examples of it as well. Let me just mention one or two other things quickly. When we talked about, again, the paradigm, getting back to the paradigm of Akira, of Hanacha, right? So we talked about Kamle Bedrava Bidei. Let's say in the middle of the act of Hotzah, you incur a Ki of Mamo. What does that mean? You did an Akira, right, for Hotzah, and then before you did the Hanacha, you incurred a Ki of Mamon. The Gemara says, in Ksuvah, Slam and Aleph, we read this Gemara, a Zorek, right, you throw something, Dalad Amos Breshus HaRabim, the Kara Shirayim Balichatza, right? And you ripped something, you did a Nezek in between. So the Gemara says, Akira Tzorech Hanacha, and therefore it's Kamlei Bidravamine. It's considered all in the middle, you draw a big circle, from the beginning of the Zrik, from the beginning of the Akira to the end of the Hanacha, it's considered one action, and therefore in between, it's one capital crime, any monetary incursion, incurred Chiyuv, in between, is Kamle Bedravamine. That's Chiddush, but that's what Tosfos says in Ksuvos. Interesting, just to highlight it further, Reb Chaim understood that the Rambam disagrees when it comes to Motzim Rishus Rishus. If you do an Akira b'Rishus HaYachid and a Hanacha b'Rishus HaRabim, Reb Chaim thought it wasn't all one unit, right? But that the Akira, the Chiluf Rishuyos, the Hanacha, each one is a distinct requirement. Let's say there are three requirements, different ways of saying this, Reb Chaim, but it's not for now. But the point is three requirements. So if something happens in between the three, you don't draw a big circle around the whole thing and say, oh, it's one action. So if in between one and two, or two and three, there was a chi of mamon, right? You would be chayiv, because it wouldn't become levidrava minei. Everybody understand that? That's Reb Chaim. We discussed that earlier in the year. What about bishul? Let's say, in between putting the food in the oven and it cooking, well, whatever the case is, it shouldn't be so difficult to find a case, you incurred a monetary chiyuv of this object. Would that be considered kum legidrav minei because it's in between the nesina batanur and the yafiyah of bishul?
Has to be a kesher.
Wouldn't be a kesher
between all the actions.
That's what I'm asking. Is it considered to be that it's all one process of cooking or baking? What is baking or cooking? It starts from putting the food in a place where there's a flame where it's going to be cooked or boiled or whatever, or baked, right? And it ends up with the actual baking and the cooking and whatever, but it's all one process. If it's all one process, then it's comparable to Akira in the beginning, Hanach on the end, and the things that take place in between are considered to be part of that process.
Well, one's a psik ratio, the other isn't.
What do you mean, a psik ratio? What's a psik ratio?
I mean, in Akira, once you put it in,
yes.
Inevitably, the results happen.
Well, you could stop it.
You take it out.
You went Hanacha.
You take it out. That's no problem.
A two disjointed actions.
If anything, then I would be more inclined to think that there was Kamle Bedrava Minei and Afia and Bishul than in Akira and Hanacha.
Yeah.
Maybe you take Kol Shekein if you want. But that isn't a problem. That's not going to be a question. I don't know. Anyway, this is an interesting question. I'll give another example. It's very similar. We talked earlier in the year, the Mishnah on Kupei Amud Aleph. You know, it's the quotes of the debate between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim. Well, what we call Yesh Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir or no. What's Yesh Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir? Yesh Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir means that, again, you need Tchilas of a Sofa B'Shkaga, right? But let's say you had a Yediyah in the middle, right? And then you forgot again. You were Shkaga, Yediyah, and then Shkaga. So, for example, in between the Akira and the Hanacha, you had a Yediyah. So that's what it seems to be generally in Kosev. It's the paradigm here is Kosev Shtei Osios. You wrote an Os, right? You remembered. You forgot. You wrote the second Os. So the Mishnah says that's a debate between Rabbi Gamliel. If you look here just 1 second in Kufei Amud Aleph, Machlokas between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chacham. Rabbanu Tzavri Yeshivia Lachatzi Shir. The last Tosus in the Perek in Habona. Pierce Bekuntis Hod Nokat Osaka Shakas Yakasmin Abayim. I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm doing the Tosus there. We did this also actually, but not now. Anyway, the Mishnah. A kosei beis otzios b'shtei alamos, the last Mishnah of Onan, Kupayim and Aleph. You write two otzios in two different states of forgetfulness, meaning you knew in between. Hachat shakris, hachat bein arbayim. Rabbi Gamliel, l'chayiv, l'chachamim, potri. Rabbi Gamliel says, ein yedia l'chati shir. Meaning, if you remembered, but in between, that's not considered a memory, right? In between one os and the other os, and therefore you're chayiv. When you forget again, you're chayiv for a shogeg. And the chachamim, who we paskin like, say, potter, even though it's chatzi shir, right? That you remembered, you're still potter. So the meiri, if you remember, nav gimel amid beis. Says we paskin like the chachamim, but when it comes to hotza'a, let's say after the akira, before the hanacha, you had a memory, you remembered, then you forgot again b'shas hanacha. Right? So according to chachamim, you should say yesh yedia l'chatzi shir. It's not tkilas of sofa b'shkaga, right? So the Meiri says no, because in his opinion. He says, I think that's true, he says, in Dalet Amos Brishas Harabim. In Dalet Amos Brishas Harabim, he'll say, Yesh Yediyah L'chatzi Shir, in between the Akira and the Hanacha. However, he says, in Otsam, Rishus L'Rishus, just like Reb Chaim's idea, we find this same idea. But if it's Otsam, Rishus L'Rishus, says the Meiri, the Hanach, in his opinion, the Hanacha Zikar. Since the Hanacha Zikar, therefore, we don't say, Yeshidiyah l'chatzi shir. So what will happen in Bishul? Let's say after you put the food in the oven, then you remembered and then you forgot again. Our Gemara talks about that case, but our Gemara doesn't talk about the case where you forgot again. Our Gemara talks about the case where you remembered, right? And then you remembered at the end also. Let's say you remembered, you forgot, then the Bishul and the Afia took place. Exactly like between one os and the other, or between the Akira and Anach.
It should be Yeshidia.
What?
It should be Yeshidia.
So actually, the Ramban and Tosishanim say, oh, it seemed to say, depends on the Machlokas, Rabbi Gamliel, on the Chachamim. However, the Sefer Hashlama and Sefer Michtam, some of the Chachmei Provence, disagree. What they say, but they say in the other way. They say, here, everybody agrees with the. Here everybody agrees with the Chachamim. Even Rabbi Gamliel will agree to the Chachamim. Why? Because here they say the whole process is considered one process. When you put the food in the oven, that's called Tchilas Bishul, and then as it's cooking and baking, this is an additional Kiddush. As it's cooking and baking, it continues to be more and more and more and more and more part of the process until it culminates. He says, and that's the point is that you need you know, tkilas of a sofa. The whole process has to be the state of halama. So even the chachamim, or sorry, even Rabbi Gamliel, who disagrees with the chachamim, generally, in this particular case, the bishul will agree that it's an integrated whole, and there's no such thing as Yeshidiyah L'chatzi Shir. That implies that it's very front-loaded. From the beginning of putting it in the oven, it's already an act of Bishul. Okay? So there are numerous issues. The Gemara in Menachos on Pei Dalet Amud Beis talks about chimutz of a mincha. Gemara there says that if you put something in a place where it's going to be nischametz, right, that's a violation. That's considered to being mechametz a mincha. The Gemara there compares it to bishul the Shabbos. You know, just like ma'isa Shabbos, just like nesinas basar al gabe gecholim. So the Rambam in ma'isa Karbonos, when he quotes this halacha, the Rambam used to quote this a lot. For this point, says, oh, because in bishul, right, the gram bishul, right, is considered bishul. Putting something in a state, in a place, where ultimately it's going to cook or bake, even though it hasn't yet cooked or baked, it's not considered groma. That is bishul. That's what bishul is. So the Rambam is another Rambam. I always try to connect. It's another Rambam. Echad ha'or, echad ha'etzim. The Rambam seems to say that even if you provide, you know, the fuel, the fire, right? It's not the last person, you know, who the anybody who contributes to Bishul is Bishul. Other Rishonim don't like the Rambam. They ask questions on the Rambam. There's a lot to talk about in Sheets of Rambam and Bishul. But the point I'm trying to make is that there are certain malachos. Well, we know this anyway. I mean, this is essentially what the Gemara says about parallel, about Zoreh. Right? The Gemara says that, you know, if you throw the stuff in the air and the wind is going to separate it, Gemara in Bava Kamma and Daf Samach Amud Aleph says, tries to compare that to the issue of Grumma, you know, bin Nezakin. A chai for Grumma bin Nezakin, maybe you should bring a raya from Zoreh, where you throw something in the air and the wind pushes it away. You see the Grumma is real. So the Gemara says, shining Zoreh, the Malachas Machsheva Sasur Torah. That's the single Gemara in Shas that uses Malachas Machsheva Sasur Torah as a Chumra, not a Kula. No, they're telling you that. That's why you're chayiv in Shabbos, because Malachas Machsheva. Usually, Malachas Machsheva Sasur Torah is a higher standard, higher threshold, and you're Pater. And Malachas Machsheva Sasur Torah is Pater, Makalkal is Pater, Kalachayad is Pater, Misasek is Pater. Right? Anyways, but the point I'm trying to make is, and this is part of the debate, how to read that Gemara. So I'm trying to say, well, Zoreh, the nature of Zoreh is, it's a Malachas Grama in a way. If you do something which then, you know, is harnesses some other energy or power, or putting it in that situation is the malacha. So not exactly the same, but you know, this is the idea that Bishul is a different kind of a malacha. What do you mean? No, no, you still have to get to the end. If it doesn't cook and bake in the end, then you haven't done anything. But it's a tznai.
But you started it.
Right. If the starting of it is a malacha, as long as it ends. Oh. All this Gemara is saying is that if you don't never get to the end, then nothing happened. You go and build some afraid, nothing happened.
That's why it's front loaded.
It's front loaded, but you have to get to the end. If nothing ever happened, then nothing happened. Right, if you put food in the oven and then you take it off before it bakes or cooks, so you can't say, oh, the act of baking or cooking turns out to be, you know, putting it on the oven. Yeah. Only if it ends up being cooked or baked. But the question is, does that mean the cooking and the baking is the key ingredient, or is that just a condition for the putting on the oven to be considered bishul? But it certainly is at least a condition. That's what our Gemara tells us. That's the question. How do you read our Gemara? Is our Gemara telling us that the end is the key? Or is the Gemara telling us the beginning is the key as long as there's an end, but the beginning is the key? Or is it not a beginning, not an end? It's a, like the Hashlama said, it's a process. It's an integrated process. Or maybe there's a Maisa in the beginning, and Zchetza or Chalos Bisho in the end, then you have to figure out which deed to depend on which. That's the most likely in the Shitzah Rabbah, certainly.
The
crime. Yeah. Similar to that. Yeah. Like coming down. Yeah.
So people, one person puts it in the oven, and the other one lights the oven.
Say that again?
One provides the fuel, and one puts it in the oven.
Yeah.
So does the Rambam say they're both sides?
Rambam seems to say that all those people are...
So how does that account for what we learned before? That each one has to do the whole of Aaron?
Well, that's when you're talking about, you know, halves or phases. But, Ram says, Echad maybe a Sa'or, Echad maybe a Sa'etzim. Bishul is just a little bit different. That's a good question, but you're talking about, you know, one does the Akira, the other does the Hanacha. Let's say one does the. These are both people who are doing the act of Bishul. Yeah.
Would this be an analogy? On Pesach, I take flour and I take water and I mix them. This is going to take time for humus.
I think I mentioned that the Gemara in Menachos on Teidaud on Beis doesn't talk about Chametz and Pesach, but it talks about Chimutz in Menachos. Similar. Very similar. Okay, so there's much more to talk about, obviously, but that's like a little bit of a Oh, that's a little bit of a... That's part of the topic of, you know, how we understand Balachas Bishol as it's developed in this circuit. So now let's at least begin, because time's of the essence, to talk about Chatei Kadesha Yizka Chadeo. The third part of the topic here. So just a little bit of background. A little background is, you know, this week's Parsha... Parsha... What?
Eved.
No, but I didn't mean that, but what's an Eved?
No, because... I want to say that you come before, but an Eved, you don't come before. If you only have one bed, you only have one
bed.
You never get everything. You don't
want to say...
So why don't you say...
Mishakana Eved Kana Adon Liatmo.
Imach Kaidam. But Eved, we don't say that. I mean, I didn't pick it up. I saw it. I read it someplace.
But that's sure that it's, you mean to show that you have something you have to sacrifice.
You have to sacrifice.
That's because Misha Kona Eved Kona Adon Liatzmo. You have to. Okay, that's an interesting point. That isn't what I was going to say, but that's interesting.
Okay.
But it's good. I like it. It's food for thought. What is it? The Koshlu Ish Ba'avon Achiv. Is that how the pasuk in the Chukosai? How's it go? Do we have a Balkori? No, Balkori? Balkosai. Upcoming. I think that's where the pasuk goes. So the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin and elsewhere that this refers to Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh.
Right.
I said two Gersos, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh or Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, which I think is also actually relevant here. Anyways, in the Gemara in the Babli. Could be in Rishami too, I'm not sure. The phrase Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh or Zeh Bazeh is actually, this is I think not known, I don't know if people speak about it or not, but it occurred to me, it really speaks about onshin and refers about collective punishment. That's why it's in Bechu, it's in part of the Tochacha of Bechu Kosai. In other words, you're going to be punished for what your neighbor does. And then there are these other psukim also, the Gemara speaks about in Sanhedrin elsewhere, by Kanasaurus Hashem Elohkeinu, by Haniglos Lonu Levanenu, right? That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. An expansion of that in Sota, that, you know, when Klal Yisrael entered into only when Klal Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael, do we apply these dinim of collective punishment, which is based on Klal Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh or Zeh Bazeh. So actually, the Gemara, when it speaks about directly about Klal Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh, speaks about it in terms of, you know, other Jews being held accountable, you know, even in terms of onshim, to the averos of their fellow Jew. And then the question is, only he can stop him, or he can give him tochacha, you know, or not. That becomes part of the discussion. However, reflexively, when all of us hear the phrase Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh or Zeh Bazeh, we don't think of it in terms of collective punishment.
You said the mitzvah can be yotze another person.
And we think of yotze motzi. Yeah, exactly. So that's interesting. Klal Yisrael has good instincts. But the fascinating thing is that the Gemara of yotze motzi, just a little background information. Yotze motzi, the Gemara itself never says Klal Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh or Zeh Bazeh. Rishonim says, Rashi says it, in the mainstream Rishonim, and I think the earliest, which is pretty early, is the Shilto says it in the Shilto. But, so you have it in the Gonim and you have it in Rashi, but you do not have it explicitly in the Gemara. I think that's a very interesting point. But that's what we associate Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh. The Rush in Brachos on Daf Chaf Amud Beis actually has a line in which he says, well, Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh, Rebus, everybody knows that's about, you know, sacrificing, you know, putting yourself on the line, you know, for your neighbor. It sounds like even in terms of, you know, mitzvos and isurim, it doesn't say that in the Gemara. Even Yotze Motzi is not putting yourself on the line, you know, making sacrifices for your Jewish neighbor. It just means that Yotze Motzi, that, you know, if you've already fulfilled your obligation, that you are still able to be mitzaref him, to mitzuref him, especially that you can etc. But this is the Rush, famous Rush. It's in the context of a very, very controversial thing that the Rush says. Well, the question is, how controversial is it? What's that? Yeah. So the rush there is talking about the sugya brachos of chafu b'deis, where the you know, the Gemara there says that kiddush is Gemara has a suffix about birchas hamazon, whether women are obligated in birchas hamazon minat Torah. The Gemara says that women are obligated in kiddush minat Torah because you know, zachar v'shamar, the hekesh of shmira and zechira. And the question is, what about birchas hamazon? So the maskana of many of the poskim is, since the bayit lo ipshita, that you should not, that women cannot be motzios men in benching, even though they're obligated to bench clearly, because we're just not sure whether or not they have chiv doraisa or drabanan. And then the rush asks the question. The rush says, and even if it's only drabanan, who really cares? We do find that men, even if the yatsar are motzi acherim, and that includes even if they're only mechuyev bidrabanan, that they can be motzi someone else on a daraisa level, or so it would seem. So what difference does it make whether women are obligated in birchas hamazon, yes or no? In the end of the day, daraisa drabanan, in the end of the day, they should be able to be motzios men, just on the basis of the concept of kol yisrael arevim zeh lazeh. So the rush, and as far as I know, no one said this before the rush, it then got picked up, you know, like wildfire, and, you know, everybody, so much written about it. The rush said, well, the answer is that men also come under the rubric of Kol Yisrael Reim Zelazet, and the women do not. That's very, you know, logically questionable, or, you know, what does that even mean? So there's a big debate among the poskim whether the rush really meant that or not. Okay, what do you mean? He said it, and someone's been written about it, so obviously he meant it. What we mean is as follows. The Dagul Mervava, what's that?
Donald Sterling?
We're talking about the rush here. The question is, what does it mean? So the Dagul Mervava, which is an Oda Behuda, you know, it's and others, you know, but just he's one of the most example one. But there are all sorts of issues in Nafkamina, like, you know, if the men are Yotzei Kiddush, you know, in Shul through the Tefillah, so they, you know, so what about being, so they're only Mechuyim Drabanan, but the women are obligated Doraisa in Kiddush, because Nashu Machiavs Kiddush Doraisa, that's clear. So what about that? And what about, you know, women being motzios, other women, if there's no din of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh? Certainly, you know, men under those conditions. So that's like a big, big issue. That sort of became Eger as a tshuva, like towards the beginning of his tshuvas, and then, I don't remember, Zayin Ches, something like that, where he quotes his Dagul Mervava and all these complexities. He says, well, number one, it might be different, you know, women to men, women to women might be different. Men certainly can be motzios, motziim women, just if they don't have the ability arev to be motzi, it doesn't mean that they can't be yotzei through arevas. But then Rabbi Kadega goes further. Rabbi Kadega says, I don't think the Rush ever said or ever meant what all the Acharonim understood. Ah, so what did he mean? So he says very, very persuasively, no, that's not, you don't understand the pshat. The pshat is nothing to do with men or women, where you say call yourself Rabbi Zelda. It applies equally across the board to all the genders. What the Gemara meant was another chiddush, and that is, in an area where two people, two Jews, are fully obligated, right, in such an issue, we also apply the din of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh. Namely, even if one already was Yotzei Yidei Chavasa, or maybe wasn't in this particular condition, isn't Mechuyev, or he's only Mechuyev Drabanan, right, so we draw this big circle around everybody, we say Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Lazeh, or Zeh Lazeh. However, if one Jew, one category of Jew, let's say, is not mechuyev in a certain mitzvah, right, midaraisa, so then there's no kol yisrael reim zelazen, his ability to be motzi someone else, because they're not unified in that regard. So what the Rush meant to say, the Rush meant what he said, but what he meant was something else. What he meant was, the Gemara is mistapek whether women are obligated in Birchas Hamazon Doraisa or not. They're certainly obligated in Kiddush. Oh. So the Rosh said, so for that reason, we can't allow the women to be motzios, the men, because if they're not mechuyev daraisa, according to the tzad hasafek, the 50% possibility that they're not mechuyev daraisa, so then there's no din of kol yisrael areim zelazeh either. Not because they're women, but because they're not mechuyev in this particular category. Lo yitzur, you had men who were not mechuyev in a particular mitzvah, they wouldn't be kol yisrael areim zelazeh with another Jew either. I mean, the issue isn't the gender issue, it's that kol yisrael areim zelazeh requires that the people involved be equally in the parsha of that particular field. That's what Rabbi Kiveger said. That's the pshat in the rush.
So the women should make kiddush Friday night to be mostly the men.
Shabbos says that.
So according to Rabbi Kiveger, in theory, that could be done. Rabbi Kiveger, you're still, but a lot of poskim are still choshesh for the understanding of the you know, to be Huda and many of the other poskim who don't understand it that way. But anyways, if they don't understand that way, then what does it mean that Kali Solar Aim Zelazeh applies only to men and not to women? I think there's a possible, I happen to think Rabbi Kiveger's explanation of the Rosh is very compelling, but the understanding of the other Achronim, I think, can be understood as well, but we'll get back to that when we get into more detail. Okay. Anyway, this is all background to try to explain that Kol Yisrael Areivim Zelazeh in the Gemara, just to sum up, is about collective ownership. Okay. Then for Rashi and some of the Gaonim, it was extended to Yatza, Motzi, and its equivalent. Right? And then the Rosh, that same Rosh, which I'm talking about in Brachos and Achafam Beis, which talks about whether or not it only applies to men or applies also to women. There's a debate what that rush means. But in the context of that discussion of the rush, he says, everybody knows that Kol Yisrael Areivim Zelazeh, right, is about, giving things up, you know, and taking responsibility for other Jews', state of religiosity. Okay. Otherwise, the Gemara never uses Kol Yisrael Areivim Zelazeh that way. It's fascinating that if you, again, wake somebody up in the middle of the night and you say, Kol Yisrael Areivim Zelazeh, they will tell you that what it means, they're not going to tell you it means collective punishment, and they're not going to tell you even that it's limited to Yatzimot. They'll say it's the idea that, you know, you really have a spiritual responsibility to your fellow man. And if you ask him, did you sacrifice for that? I mean, do you give up your own spiritual ambition sometimes for another member of Klal Yisrael? They'll say, could very well be. Klal Yisrael is a very powerful. What I'm trying to say is, Kol Yisrael Areivim Zelazeh became, you know, almost like a symbol and a symbol of the unity of Klal Yisrael and the collectivity of Klal Yisrael. And we trust in the race instinct, of Klal Yisrael, that's really what it is. But it's important still to identify where it is in the Gemara and where it is in the Rishonim, etc. So one of the most important expressions of this happens to be our topic here, where the phrase Kol Yisrael Areivim Zelazeh that absolutely does not appear, but it doesn't matter because that's what the Gemara is. That's what this issue is about. Yeah,
that's it's kofen also. I mean, the guy in mitzvahs is also up from that principle.
Yeah, 100%. As we don't say, oh, it's an individualistic thing.
Yeah,
it affects all of Klal Yisrael, and we also care about each and every Jew. Even we care enough to coerce him. Yeah. People think religious coercion is just the Ayatollahs, but it really means that you believe that quality of life, again, nobody likes to have to employ coercion, but if you think religious quality of life and obedience to the Rabbonu Shalom is a sine qua non for Jewish people and for
Israel today.
What?
Big issue in Israel.
Right. So again, it's not wise sometimes. Most of us, would not want to seek via datit in our time because it's a disaster and a nightmare. But that's because the reality, in terms of how it would be understood and interpreted, and in the societies in which we live, it's not a manageable, idea. But in theory, an ideal, idyllic, halachic world where people, did understand, and they also grew up in an environment in which the expectation of really, being loyal and so on. There is a concept of kviyat datit. I mean, it has its place. Just that if you live in a pluralistic society and if 60 or 70% or more, depending on whether you're talking about Israel or America, whatever it is, But of the Jewish world, you know, our Tinek Shenishba or bombarded with all sorts of other things, then obviously you not only can't do it, you shouldn't do it, because it's spiritually counterproductive. Not just that you won't be able to get away with it, you know, there'll be too much fallout. It's just, it's not the right way to go, given this reality. That's different than saying that in a more, you know, in a Gan Eden kind of a world, or not even that, in an autonomous Jewish community where everybody grows up, you know, where it's self-evident that you adopt certain norms and values, then coercion is part of any real religious system.
If you know what will help, are you to be kofenoso? If you know what will help.
Yeah, well, tochaka, I mean, well, kofenoso, I should teach you. Not, but tochak, I'll put it this way, is contingent upon effectiveness, right? Kashem she, you know, mitzvah lomar davar anishma, kach mitzvah lo lomar davar shelo anishma. Anyways, the point is that with Kol Yisrael Reim Zalazeh, this sugya that we're talking about now, chatei kedei sheyizke chavero, is just an amazing expression of this whole idea. Meaning, I care so much about my fellow Jew.
I put my leg.
Right, that I'm going to violate, you know, for him. But the question, yet, of course, is when and under what conditions. You know, that's going to be very crucial. So this is going to be a window into how far we put, again, without the words, Kol Yisrael Areivim Zeh LaZeh, you know, how far we push that concept. Number one, is it an exception? Is it a rule in terms of, you know, spiritual self sacrifice? What are the conditions that justify that or that demand it? Is there any personal leeway? Do you have a choice? Can I say, I want to, you know, sacrifice myself for the spiritual betterment of my fellow? What are the parameters of that? Is that voluntary? Can you do that voluntarily? These are all interesting questions. Instead of there being an exception or rule, maybe it just really depends. Maybe it's a very close call and it always depends on the circumstances. Or maybe there's a way of looking at Jewish life in a collective way, where you're taking a Klal Yisrael and a Tzibur perspective, in which case you're going to be much more open, you know, to a wider, let's see, speak about the aggregate good of Klal Yisrael, as opposed to, you know, where you're on the individual or personal plane, where you say more Chayecha Kodmin. Yeah.
Well, why isn't Klal Yisrael Raven no gay idea?
No, I'm just saying it's a curious, it doesn't really matter so much. I mean, I'm just saying it's a curious thing that the phrase outside of the rush in that other context implies. He doesn't say kadei kadei she yizke either, although what he's describing about the, when he says, oh, Kol Yisrael Areivim Zeh LaZeh, he speaks about it in much wider terms.
What that sacrifice is the rush of fun? You mentioned sacrifice.
Sorry?
You mentioned the Rebbe mentioned sacrifice in the rush. Well, what's the sacrifice that the rush is?
No, the rush, I don't know if the sacrifice in that case, but he does say, when he talks about, you know, Kol Yisrael Areivim Zeh LaZeh, he talks about, you know, the lengths that you have to go, you know, on behalf of your fellow. Yotze Motzi isn't really on behalf of your fellow. You're not going to any lengths on behalf of your fellow. I'm saying he's implying.
There's no cost in
Yotze Motzi. Yeah, there's no cost in Yotze Motzi. Once we say that there's no bracha levatala, so, you know, it reflects a certain perspective and phenomenon, right? But there's no cost. But if I say, oh, do the Aveira, so he'll get off, you know, with less, that's a spiritually significant statement. Yeah.
So maybe to the extent you have responsibility, you're also doing it for your own sake, too.
Oh, excellent. But that's an interesting irony that formulation is, in a way, you know, selfishness, but only based on a completely selfless perspective. Right? Which I like. Meaning you might say, well, you, meaning Reuven, should do, you're not doing it for Shimon. He's doing it for you know, it's his obligation, you know, to help Shimon. But in the end of the day, what kind of concept is that? The answer is an amazingly idealistic one. Your selfishness is a function of viewing life in a completely selfless way. That's an amazing thing.
Throwing yourself on a grenade
against others, you're doing it for yourself. I mean, that's
to protect others.
You're right, but this is like, you'll see. Well,
you're committing suicide to
save others. But is that altruistic? For sure, it's altruistic. But What I'm saying, the Maariv Chayis has this line, like what you just said, where he says, oh, you're not doing that for Shimon, it's your obligation. So what kind of system sees it as your personal obligation to give yourself up for others? It's not exercise, it's not discipline. What is it? The answer is it's a system in which profoundly your affinity to others is just such a powerful force that's what life. Okay, I see my time is up. Okay, so we're going to discuss this next